Everybody have your Bible open to Mark chapter 6 to start with, please. Last week, we tried to take note of the fact that the Lord's home was, of course, the key factor in His early life. It certainly had an impact on not only Him, but also His other family members and neighbors. And we saw that there were normal things that occurred in his life. He grew. He was in submission to his parents. They sometimes had issues. For example, the time when the Lord stayed in the about his father's business, and they lost track of him, assuming that he was with other family members and so on. Today we want to turn our attention more to his adult life and think about the place that home played in his adult life. And I'd like for us to think for a moment from Mark chapter 6 about what these two or three verses might tell us, what we might gather here about the Lord's home life. Let's read verses 1 through 3. Actually, 1 through 4 to start with. Dan, do you mind to read that? Can you read the book up that close now? After your party yesterday, I'm going to hold it over here for you.
He doesn't think that's anything.
Okay.
Jesus went out from there and came into his hometown, and his disciples followed him. When the Sabbath came, he began to teach in the synagogue, and the many listeners were astonished, saying, "Where did this man get these things? And what is this wisdom given to him, and such miracles as these performed by his hands? Is not this the carpenter, the son of Mary, the brother of James, and Joseph, and Judas, and Simon? And are not his sisters here with us?" And they took offense at him. And Jesus said to them, "A prophet is not without honor except in his hometown and among his own relatives and in his own household."
All right. Now, what things there can you gather about the Lord's home life from those few verses? And there are several things. So just see what you see. What do you see there? What strikes you? Brian?
They didn't have anything negative to say.
All right. There was no fault found. There's not a great big critical thing said about him here. What else?
It was just ordinary. I mean, they saw normal kids. They didn't see the Son of God or anything in him. He was just...
All right, familiarity had occurred. And familiarity made them take him a bit for granted, didn't it? One of the things about our families is that we, in familiarity with each other, overlook the goodness in each other, and the greener pastures syndrome can strike our families as just like it can anywhere else. We can start seeing all of the good and the people we work with, or we're just around at school, or the people we meet occasionally, and overlook all of the faults that they have, while at the same time, in our families, we can see all of the faults that they have and overlook all the good. That is a perpetual problem in family life. Notice that Jesus had a hometown. His hometown was Nazareth. Notice that he had apparently a trade. What was he? All right, they referred to him as the carpenter. Do we ever identify people by their work and not by their personality and character? Do you find yourself saying, "What do you do?" rather than, "Who are you?" Yes, that's one of the things that can happen. Then notice, did Jesus have the same family responsibilities and connections that you have? How many in here are mothers? How many are brothers? Just keep your hand up. Once you raise them higher. All right, I want you to admit the truth. How many of you are brothers? How many are sisters? All right, I look around. That takes in pretty much all of us, doesn't it? Did the Lord have anything in common with us? Of course. And notice that these family members, one of the things about the doctrines of Christianity is the idea that Mary was somehow an intermediary between God and man, that she somehow had a perpetual virginity or whatever. And of course you look at this and Christ had several brothers and more than one sister, at least, because it said his sisters are here with us, and so he would have learned what it's like to grow up in a family and have a seat at the table and all those kind of things, like all of us do. Now, I'd like to turn at this point our attention to where this leads in his adult life and his ministry. So turn to Matthew 4 and verse 13. And I want to ask you, in reading this passage, this is the beginning of the Lord's public ministry. In the record of Matthew, this follows the temptation in the wilderness, which followed his baptism at the hands of John the Baptist and so forth. What happens in verse 13 of Matthew 4? Brendan?
Leaving Nazareth, came and settled in Capernaum, which is by the sea in the region of Zebulun and Naphtali.
All right. In the territory of Galilee, the northern part of the land, and the village of Capernaum was located caught by the Phoenix, the northwest corner of the Sea of Galilee. And do you remember about how far it was from Nazareth to Capernaum? I meant to look it up, and somehow I'm thinking 16 to 20 miles, of 15 to 20, something like that. So not a long ways off, but by foot, it was a little bit removed from there. So notice that Jesus... His hometown has been Nazareth, but it says here that he went and lived in Capernaum by the sea. All right, now what does verse 12 tell us about the circumstance of this move or the timing of this move? All right, John the Baptist had been arrested by Herod and imprisoned, remember, at this point, and that led eventually to the death of John the Baptist. Maybe that had something to do with this move, although it wouldn't have hidden him from Herod in it because it was still his territory. There have been some who have thought, well, maybe this is something he did to protect his relatives in and around Nazareth. We don't know that for sure. But Luke 4 and verse 31 adds, in the previous verses too, it adds something to this that I'll just mention in passing. Someone look at that verse, notice what it says, and tell me what happened right before it. Luke 4 and verse 31.
And he came down to Capernaum, a city of Galilee. He was teaching them on the Sabbath.
All right, now, this would be the same moving to Capernaum, I think, as Matthew 4:13. What happened in Luke's record right before this? If you back up for several verses there, you'll notice that Jesus went to the synagogue, as was his custom on the Sabbath day. He took the roll of Isaiah and he found the place where it was written that light would come and all of that. And then he rolled up the book and he said, I tell you, this scripture has been fulfilled in your ears. And everybody said amen and was happy about it, right? All right, they were ready to throw him out of town. So the beginning of the Lord's ministry did not bring initially rejoicing and celebration. It happened in a setting of danger and anger. And his move to Capernaum had something to do with that fact, apparently. Now, compare Matthew 9:1 and Mark 2:1. Let's read both of them so you get the flavor of what I'm saying here. And how did this town of Capernaum come to be known?
Matthew
9:1, Mark 2:1. The reason I know these go together is because these statements are followed by the record of the time when a man gets carried into the house and they let him down through the... Remember that? That's the situation. Now, what does Matthew 9:1 say? All right, his own city. Okay. Now, what about Mark 2 and verse 1? What was that city?
Capernaum.
So we've gone now from his hometown being Nazareth in Mark 6 to his own city being Capernaum in Mark 2 and verse 1. And we take it from that Capernaum becomes his base of operations during his public ministry. He lives there during the time that his ministry goes on. Why might he have chosen Capernaum as the base of operation instead of Nazareth?
Peter and some of them were there.
All right. For one thing, the people who became his co-workers, and remember, there's some sort of family connection through Jesus' mother. If Salome was his, happened to have been his aunt, then James and John would have been relatives in that sense, and there are people who think that there were friendship connections with Peter and Andrew as well through their work. Another thing would be that because of Capernaum's location, it was a point of travel both from the north and from east and west. People who might have been going around the sea. It was also a fairly prosperous area. Dr. Jack Lewis wrote something about this that I brought to share with you. It says his arrival in Capernaum, located by the Sea of Galilee, brought Jesus into a populous region. Listen to this now, and this surprised me a little bit. For Capernaum was near the trade route between Damascus and Egypt. Josephus, of course the Jewish historian, informs us that Galilee had 204 villages at the time, none of which had a population of less than 15,000. Now, if that's to be depended on, that surprises me what the population... There were 9 populous cities on the shore of the Lake of Galilee. So here in Galilee were the most people to hear him. Jesus carried out his ministry and found the people open to change. And Josephus said... of the Galileans, they were ever fond of innovation and by nature disposed to changes. And so if a man was going to preach repentance because the kingdom was at hand, that would be a place to start. Now, how did Matthew see this move to Nazareth, from Nazareth to Capernaum, and the significance of it? Let's look at Matthew 4 and verses 14 through 16. I'm switching back and forth from Matthew to Mark, but I'm not switching time frames, or I'm not going to unrelated topics here. Be aware of that. Notice that this Capernaum was in the territory of the tribes of Zebulun and Naphtali, two of the northernmost tribes in the Promised Land and in the region of Galilee. Look at Matthew 4, verses 14 through 16. Becky, read that, please.
This was to fulfill that what was spoken through Isaiah the prophet, saying, "The land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali, by the way of the sea beyond the Jordan, Galilee of the Gentiles. The people who were sitting in darkness saw a great light, and to those who were sitting in the land and shadow of death,
upon them came a light dawn.
All right. Now, that is a quotation from Isaiah, and the point being that Matthew saw, and of course you may be aware that this is apparently Matthew's hometown too. What was his own background? All right, he was a tax collector. He wasn't looked on too favorably. And Matthew saw this as a fulfillment of the prophecy that the people who sat in darkness would see a great light. And he saw Jesus move to Capernaum and the beginning of the preaching of the kingdom, and then the mighty works that Jesus did as a beginning of that great light. Now, all of that gives us a setting to explore a little bit more the home situation. Matthew said that he went and lived in Capernaum. We forget sometimes how few of the actual days of the Lord's public ministry the gospel records describe. I meant to write it down, and I didn't, but it's relatively few when these events happen. In the meantime, we may overlook the fact that he lived somewhere. And so I know he traveled around a lot and so forth, and we'll explore that a little bit more. But I'd like you to notice the mention of the house in Matthew. Look at Matthew 9, verses 27 through 28. Who wants to read it? You'll get that for us, please. And then Matthew 13, verse 1. Connie, if you'll get that one for us. And then Matthew 13, verse 36. And I do this just to ask you to notice the detail that gets overlooked here. Tim, if you'll get 2 Tim here, if you'll get if you'll get Matthew 13 and verse 36 for us. Okay. All right. Look at these passages now and watch for the mention of the house.
As Jesus went out from there, two blind men followed him, calling out, "Have mercy on us, Son of David." When he had gone indoors, the blind men came to him, and he asked them, "Do you believe that I am able to do this?" "Yes, Lord," they replied.
What does going indoors imply? All right, he went into the house. He entered the house. He went inside. All right, chapter 13, verse 1. Matthew 13 is the parable chapter in Matthew. Verse 1 says what?
That same day Jesus went out of the house and sat beside the sea.
All right. He had been, of course, in somewhere where he was staying, and he went out of the house beside the sea. All right. Verse 36.
Then he left the crowds and went into the house, and his disciples came to him and said, "Explain to us the parable of the tares of the field."
All right. Now notice here that he after he had taught these parables, then he came back from beside the sea and went into the house, and his disciples came to him, and he taught them there. Now, I've noted on the paper, that it, on your outline, that in Mark 2 and verse 1, we'll read these in just a moment, so just take this as is for a minute. In Mark 3:20, both describe him as being at home. Okay? So there is a house where we find him frequently, and he's described as being at home. Now, what are the possible explanations for that? And I have some of them in mind, but how could those things be true, and what possible senses can they be taken? All right. Here are the possibilities. There are some who believe, and think of this, there are some who believe that this is talking about Mary's new house, which would mean what? That when he left Nazareth and came to Capernaum, he brought her with him, and they secured a house there where he stayed when he was there. All right?
I want to show you in a minute why I doubt that one. There are some who believe that the house that is mentioned here is the house of Peter and Andrew. Because in Mark 8, in Matthew 8 rather, excuse me, one of the first mighty works that's described is Matthew 8 verse 14, when Jesus entered Peter's house. And there are some who think that we're to understand that the mention of the house as we go along here will still be Peter's house, and that Jesus possibly stayed there whenever he was in Capernaum. That is a possibility. There are also some who believe that when Matthew says in Matthew 13 and verse 1, that same day Jesus went out of the house and sat beside the sea, that Matthew was actually talking about, in a humble way, his own house, and that he means my house. Now, let me point out to you that either of the last two things that I've said have some important implications. If it was Peter's house where Jesus lived while he was in Capernaum, and Peter was the first of the disciples to, when Jesus asked him, who do men say that I am? And they gave all the answers. And then he said, who do you say that I am? What was it that Peter spoke up and said? You are the Christ, the Son of the living God. Right. That great confession is the rock upon which our faith is built. Now, why would that take on even more meaning if it is the case that Jesus stayed at Peter's house when they were in Capernaum?
Saw how Peter, how Jesus lived.
All right. If, remember how we started today in Mark 6. If the people of Nazareth, who knew him as the carpenter, took him for granted to the point that he could say a prophet is not without honor except in his own country and among his own relatives and friends and so forth, if that is the human tendency, but if Peter was in a condition or in a situation where he could have seen Jesus in the most intimate circumstances of everyday life, that is, at home, and he still thought this is the Christ, the Son of the living God, then that becomes an impressive thing about the Lord and about Peter, doesn't it? The Lord would impress you that way, and Peter was not the kind of man who would take for granted what was right there close to him. Okay. On the other hand, if it were the case that Jesus was at least the guest part of the time in Matthew's house, why would that take on great meaning? And I know he was a guest at some time in Matthew's house. That's one of the lessons that we'll study. But for now, why would that take on meaning? Because Matthew was a highly respected and well thought of tax collector, right? No, the last part is true. The first part wasn't quite that way. Remember that Jesus eventually gets criticized because he'll go to a house like that. But if he ever stayed there, that would be the degree to which he was willing to identify himself with the needs of mankind for mercy and forgiveness and acceptance. All right, so both of those would be important. The other possibility is that the Lord could have had someone who allowed him to be a tenant of a house or whatever. The reason that I doubt the first that Mary had a place there, or the last that the Lord rented or secured a place like that, is Luke 9 in verse 58. Someone turn over to Luke 9. Scott, if you would, please get that for us. Luke 9 in verse 58.
And Jesus said to him, Foxes have holes and birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head.
All right, which suggests what? He at least did not have any permanent dwelling of his own. Either people provided for him or he had some place to stay at least part of the time, but he did not have the security of a home all to himself where he could just stay and let the world go by. He did not have the garage door opener that he could let down behind him and retreat behind the walls of his castle like we do. That makes us stop and think. Now, I'd like for us at this point to go a little bit more toward the what happens with his, when he does live in Capernaum, and what place does, wherever it was that he stayed, what place does that play in the unfolding of his public ministry? So I'd like for us to read under number 4 on your paper the mention of his being at home at these various junctures in his ministry, and then we'd like to think about what that means. So Brian, if you'll get Mark, we've read Mark 2:1, get Mark 2:1 and 3:20 for us. Todd, you or Sam, one there, get chapter Mark 7 and verse 17. Brandy, do you mind to get Mark 9:28 and 33? And Ruth, you or Gene, one, get to Mark 10 and verse 10 for us. Okay? Now, you notice here that I've spread this out over Mark chapters 2 through 10. There may be other mention of this. I don't, if there is, I couldn't find it. But this goes over a period of some extended time during the Lord's public ministry in which apparently he would, after having been out teaching somewhere, he would come home and stay for a while where there would be people still all around, and then he would go out again somewhere around the Sea of Galilee or to some other place, and then he would return back to this place again and so forth. Notice how frequently it's mentioned. All right, Brian.
And again, he entered into Capernaum after some days, and it was noise that he was in the house.
All right.
And the multitude cometh together again, so that they could not so much as eat bread.
All right, and in verse 20 of chapter 3, the English Standard Version, I noticed, translates it, then he went home and the crowd gathered again. So anyway, they found out where he was and went to be there. All right, now, next one, 7:17.
After he had left the crowd and entered the house of the disciples, and that was terrible.
All right, in this case, there had been a controversy over not washing their hands ceremonially, not hygienically, but ceremonially, like it was the Jewish custom to do. And there had been the discussion over what actually defiles a person in meeting with unwashed hands or what comes out of his heart. And Jesus went back into the house, left the people, and his disciples asked him what he meant. All right, next, chapter 9, 28 and 33.
After Jesus had communicated, the disciples asked him, "Why do you eat bread now?" And he said, "Why, when he was in the house, he asked, what will you argue about?"
All right, now notice in the house, this time in verse 28, they entered the house and the disciples asked him a question. In verse 33, they entered the house and he asked them a question. All right. Both of them happened in the house. Now, chapter 10, verse 10.
when they were in the house again. We talked about Jesus about this.
All right, so in this case, there had been a question about the marriage that had occurred, and trying to trip him up, and Jesus talked, and he goes back into the house, and the disciples ask him about this. Now, I've got this question to ask you. These few questions to ask you under number four. First off, what do these repeated mentions of them coming back to the house and so forth, what does that tell us about, and I've used home in quotes here, and I'm talking about, what does this tell us about home in the life of a busy person who is trying to do what he can for the Lord? For God, for the kingdom. All right. Every human being, even our Lord, has to have a place where he can. You use the word retreat. That's probably a good word. But where he can live and where he can deal with the necessities of life for a human being, which are. What?
Sleep.
All right. Y'all are thinking about, I can tell where your priorities lie here, and I can also tell who has three children. Sleep or rest or some form of peace and quiet. By human, it is, human nature is such that there has to be some rhythm to our lives that includes that. Something to eat. And time to talk with those who are closest to you. All three of those things you see here about home. And when we read the Gospels with the ministry of Jesus and the trips and the crowds and all of that, it's easy for us to think that that's all that there was to his life, and therefore he becomes remote to us, and we don't realize that he went through the 24-hour day cycles like the rest of us do, and that he had to live in keeping with his Father's will in the midst of that. All right, what does this reveal to us about ministry? And I've added to that here, what often happened when he was at home?
Or having discussion.
All right. Either the people in the house with him were asking questions, or he was asking them questions, or
people followed him home.
The people at the door or outside of the class, outside of the house, were clamoring for his attention and help. I believe that in the providence of God, he intentionally sent his son into the world before the telephone was invented. Just a personal opinion. You see here that ministry means that inconvenience occurs. Has that been your experience, Brother Thaney? You agree with it? Okay. What
Jesus
else?
Also said foxes have holes and the birds of the air have nests. The Son of Man hath no place to lay his head. So use this as temporary.
Very temporary. And even when he was there, he was willing to be interrupted and inconvenienced in order to meet the needs of people, including especially and importantly his disciples. All right, Brenda?
You also see here that when you invite a preacher over, you've got to expect the whole crowd to come.
All right. He may bring the people that he knows with him, all right? The human side of what Brenda just said, that we grin about that with church and all that kind of thing, but that's actually where a whole lot of his ministry happened, isn't it? When people invited him over, when this rabbi, this teacher, they had him over, and a great deal of the teaching occurred in the process of that. That's interesting. All right, now, especially Mark 7 and 17 and 10:10, what use was made of the home at these times when he was inside, wherever it was?
All right. Either he uses the occasion to go into more depth about something with his disciples to make sure that they have understood. For example, in this business about what comes out of your mouth defiles you and not what goes into your mouth. The Lord taught them about that. You all realize we just had an American city that voted by majority, at least for their part of the state, to legalize marijuana and to outlaw Happy Meals. We need to realize that what comes out of the heart defiles a person, I think. I can't help but think about that. And these are the times, too. Think of this. These are the private times, too, when the disciples ask him. They have a relationship. Are you ever afraid to ask, even your husband or your wife or your children or whatever? They bring it up. They bring things up to him with the parables. They ask him what these things meant and that kind of thing. Casey?
Well, I think part of what was important about it is that it also helped him to gain understanding of how the crowds and people were thinking, because he could ask them questions to gain that on a one-on-one basis.
Yeah, like who do people say that I am? And they would tell him, yeah. Just think.
I had my mother that raised me, started church on that. And when they all stayed with us, and I was preschool quite a bit. And they slept out in the yard. The men slept out there on pillows that came off the couch. And the family were my uncle. And they slept everywhere. My mother said she lived a lot longer. Would live, you know, would have been more healthy if she had took in so many preachers.
Hey guys, just a minute. Fred Wilson told me, Fred was an old railroader and all of that, and Fred told me that he was a grown man working for the railroad and all that before he ever heard the gospel or obeyed the gospel, and by that time he was into cockfighting back in though this is many, many moons ago. And he had, they would engage in that activity and they would bet on their roosters and so forth. And he said, I had some valuable ones and I had all of the paraphernalia that was used and those kind of things. And he just dragged out the story telling me this. And he said, then I went down there to that meeting and I obeyed the gospel, I was baptized into Christ, and there I was with all of those fighting roosters and all that stuff. And he just kept playing along. And I didn't know what to do. He said, I was afraid if I sold them, I'd be encouraging somebody else to engage in that. And if I kept them and then I'd be tempted to go ahead with gambling over those things. And I just didn't know. So finally I asked him, all right, Fred, what did you do? He said, most of them are free too. Thank you guys for being here.